State versus Smith. State versus Smith.
Welcome back.
Good afternoon, I'm back. Ronnie Smith was convicted by a jury of felony forgery, was sentenced to mandatory minimum of 10 years in prison to 15 years in prison as an habitual criminal. I was not his trial counsel, so I have raised issues related to ineffective assistance of counsel, which I probably don't have time to get to, but I think I've discussed those issues, which may relate to issues on appeal, depending upon how you assess some of the arguments I'm about to make. His principal argument has to do with the sufficiency of the evidence to support the felony forgery charge. Argue that the facts were insufficient to make out the prima facie elements of forgery. He also argues that the evidence was insufficient to support the element of intent to deceive because of the way the checks were issued and who the beneficiary of the proceeds of the checks were. He also argues that the amount of the loss, based upon the curious facts in the case and the way the checks were issued, was also not supported by the evidence. And the amount of the loss is important eventually in determining the degree of the offense. And there's a version of this offense that is a misdemeanor, which makes him not eligible to be an habitual criminal.
So if you take a check and it has two parties' names on it and you sign one of those parties' name, you not being one of those parties, how is that not an intent to deceive?
Well, can I back up and talk about the very unusual fact pattern here? Because what's going on here is the state alleged that he forged checks on the account of Ed Erdman, right? But there is no evidence that he signed Ed Erdman's name or anybody's name with authority on the account. And so what's confusing, and I admit that it'll make you dizzy, is that Lance Erdman's name is on the check.
Because they had a joint account at one time.
Yes, but it was canceled. Yeah. So the argument goes something like this. Can Mr. Smith forge a check on Ed Erdman's account if he doesn't sign Ed Erdman's name or anyone with authority on the account to effect that transaction, to make that check appear to be a bona fide check?
Well, if the money comes out of his account, wrongfully, can't it?
Well, whether it's a theft, whether there's something else going on, the allegation was a forgery of Ed Erdman's account.
A forgery on his account.
Yes. And the question, if you drill down, you get this very curious fact pattern in which Lance Erdman, whose name was signed on the check, deceased at the time of the trial, allegedly gave Mr. Smith permission to sign his name on a check that had his name on it, but he was not an authorized signer on the check at the time the check was signed. So the argument goes something like this. I don't think I could put Santa Claus on a check and send it in and that be a forgery of the account owner's name.
Yeah, but Santa Claus's name's not on these checks.
But I think that's a red herring, Judge. It doesn't matter whose name is on the check. It may matter to the person who's receiving the check.
Right.
It may matter, but that's not what was at issue here.
But if you look at 28603 and it says intent to deceive, you complete a written instrument which purports to be a written instrument which evidences a transfer of a legal right or interest. It doesn't say you have to have knowledge that, you know, that person's still on the account. You're completing a written instrument, and in this case, because Lance's name was on that written instrument and you're signing Lance's name, you have affected the elements.
But
have
don't
been
they
met.
Have to prove that he didn't know that Lance didn't have authority to
Why?
Give him?
Where does that say that in the statute?
The statute talks about the legal effect. And I guess the question for you to decide in this highly unusual fact pattern is whether or not that's what the statute reaches. I've been doing this a long time. I've defended a lot of forgery cases. I think I know one when I see one. My first reaction was, this isn't a forgery. This is something else, because what the claim was, and it wasn't disputed because Lance was dead and under verbal acts, the whole story was developed that it was true that he used to be on the account. It was also true that Ed Erdman would let Lance sign checks on the account, even though he wasn't authorized to sign on the account. And Lance tells Mr. Smith, you can sign my name, which is on the account, but I'm not on the account. That's the problem. The problem is, I get it that when you see the name and he signs the name of someone on the account, it doesn't look good, doesn't seem right. It's the person who's telling him that he has the authority to sign his name to the account that is the...
What if the court didn't believe that? What if the court didn't believe that Lance ever told him he could sign his name?
The question of whether or not it was believed is different from the sufficiency of the evidence. That is a different issue that if you drill down into the lesser included offenses, you drill down into what his state of mind was, you can debate whether it was believed. There was no testimony to contradict it, right? So it wasn't a dispute in the testimony. It wasn't, you gave me permission. No, you didn't give me permission. And he didn't sign Ed Erdman's name. He said, I signed Lance Erdman's name. And then you look at what the money was used for. The money went to pay Lance Erdman's credit card bills, which is something that Ed authorized. The money went to pay Ed's bills, which is something that Ed benefited from. So the entire transaction just asks you to decide whether or not, as a matter of fact, under the law, signing someone's name that is not an authorized signature on the account is a forgery without the element of, well, it does become part of the intent to deceive question, which is the second part of my argument. That is, okay, I just don't see it as a forgery. I don't see that read the jury instructions. It had to affect the legal account of Ed Erdman. And he didn't sign Ed Erdman's name. The bank would look at that and say, Lance Erdman is not a signature on this account. That's the problem. And if there is an inchoate version of that offense somewhere that just says because if Judge Bishop, if because the name was on the check and there was some dispute about whether he could sign the name on the check that isn't an authorized signature, boy, that makes for a very strange forgery case. But he also argues, look, this whole case became the tail wagging the dog over this use of the credit card for Lance. And I briefed in the case why that's problematic. Mr. Smith claimed, and it was uncontradicted, that he had authorization to use Lance's credit card. And there were lots of charges on the credit card. Some of them, after Lance passed away, were personal in nature, about $900 to $1,000 worth of things that it were arguable weren't authorized by Lance. Okay? That comes in under the inextricably linked theory. I'm not even sure what the crime is, but that was handled by defense counsel at the time, strangely. But in the end, he winds up having to defend the $900 or $1,000 worth of these charges on Lance's credit card that were paid for by these checks from Ed maybe he did that. Right? I think his argument had to be something to say, well, you can get him for that. If you want to get him at all, I think the statement was, if you want to get him at all, get him for that, which is only $900. But the jury finds all the checks, more than $5,000 of them, were forged and a loss under the forgery statute, even though the money went to Ed and went to his son, which was okay. And that seems odd to me.
The jury would have had to believe that,
right?
All the explanations that Mr. Smith gave were true. If they didn't believe him, then they could believe that all those checks were written for his own benefit.
The records
other
show,
than the electric bill.
Well, no, but the records show that the account that was paid on it was Lance's credit card.
But the state's theory being, well, he had to pay down on the credit card because he only had a $5,000 limit, so he had to pay down on it so he could keep using it.
Well, then he's, if you will, he's stealing the money on the credit card that wasn't authorized by Lance. The whole thing, I mean, it seems easier to me, that the whole problem with the case is...
You might be biased.
The whole problem with the case is that these credit cards are the tail that wags the dog. Let's assume they charge him with unauthorized use of the credit cards. this wouldn't be, this would be a $900 case. So I'm not sure how spending the money to pay the credit card that was mostly Lance's to cover the $900 is a theft of the whole amount of the payment. You could argue that maybe the $900 or $1,000 that he took that benefited himself. But when you look at what happened in the case, the hard part to get over is the question posed by Judge Bishop, and that is, if you're not signing the guy's name or the name of any authorized signer on the check, is that a forgery or is that something else? And if it's not what, if the facts aren't what you perceive them to be, was it an attempt?
But the check purports to have Lance and Ed as authorized users. Both their names are on the check.
But that's a good thing for me.
No, because he's still putting Lance's name on there, and he's not Lance.
But Lance said he could do it.
So he said. One might not believe him.
Right,
thank you.
I got my time is up. I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Hello. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant challenges the sufficiency of the evidence to support his convictions, to support the aggregation of the checks at issue. The district court's finding that his use of Lance's credit card was inextricably intertwined with the charge offenses and raises claims of ineffective assistance of counsel. The state believes appellant's assigned errors are all without merit or, in the case of some ineffective claims, unable to be addressed on the record before this court, and we are here to ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. I'll begin with appellant's argument as it relates to the sufficiency of the evidence to support his convictions. His claim is that because Lance no longer had signatory authority on the account, that at the time he signed Lance's names to the check, he could not, as a matter of law, have been guilty of forgery, as a matter of law and as a matter of fact. The state disagrees. Nebraska Revised Statutes, Chapter 28, Section 603, provides that the elements of forgery are, and the state had to present evidence that, appellant with intent to deceive or harm, falsely made, completed, endorsed, altered, or uttered a written instrument, which purported to be or was calculated to become or represent, if completed, a written instrument which did or may have evidenced, created, transferred, terminated, or otherwise affected a legal right, interest, obligation, or status. Here, the state presented evidence that appellant took checks that had both Lance's father, Ed, so Ed and Lance's names listed. He wrote checks without authorization and signed Lance's name, again without authorization, so that the checks appeared to be valid, genuine, and true. He then presented these checks to the electric company, deposited one in his own bank account, as well as to Link One, the credit card company. Two of the checks went there. He did this knowing that Lance had not signed the checks, but passed them as though they were valid. This is sufficient to support the convictions, and it's sufficient to meet the elements of second-degree forgery as provided.
Doesn't it seem a bit odd, though, to convict someone of forgery for paying your own bill?
Well, Your Honor, I think, first, I'll note that Ed did testify that he sometimes did authorize Lance to write checks. And typically, I believe that Lance would sign Ed's name on them. Once in a while, Ed would find that Lance had written a check he'd not authorized. He would confront him and say, no, you're not permitted to do that. So I think our first, you know, setting aside, I guess, the issue of authorization, the state does not believe that Lance ever gave authorization for the credit card or the checks. I think the issue isn't whether someone benefited, the person benefited from it. I think the issue is the forgery. Whether later it turns out, oh, that was good for me, that doesn't mean that at the time it happened that it was authorized or that it wasn't a crime. So I think the issue of whether there was a benefit, and I guess even if the benefit was an issue, arguably the party that benefited was the appellant. As noted by this court, the credit card, I think, had a limit of, it was close to its limit. I think it had a limit of $5,000 or so. And at the time Lance went into the hospital, I believe the statement showed it was at about $4,000, had a balance on it. Appellant, from the time that Lance was in the hospital on October 8th to, I believe, November 1st, that first statement, approximately $2,000 was charged to this credit card. Would have put it over the limit. So appellant wrote these checks to pay down the balance on the credit card so that he could continue to use the credit card. And while appellant stopped using the credit card eventually, this was after he'd been confronted, there was testimony that that credit card had never actually been returned to the family, that appellant, I believe, stated that he just put it up somewhere with all the mess of what was going on. He didn't know where it was. A wallet had been returned that had two cards that were no longer active, that had belonged to Lance, had been returned upon request of Lance's family. So whether a benefit eventually was received by someone, I think arguably appellant received the benefit.
Well, I was talking more lines of like
yes. I think it might seem a little odd, but I think ultimately if we strip all of that away, the issue is whether at the time those checks were written, were they authorized, was it a forgery? And the answer the state believes is yes. So we believe the evidence was sufficient to support the elements of second-degree forgery, as well as the aggregation of the charges. They were all within the 60-day period. It was part of the same scheme or course of conduct. The jury added up the total of the checks, and the evidence there was sufficient, even setting aside any issue of who may have actually benefited. I'll turn now to the evidence of the credit card use. Appellant argues the district court erred in allowing the state to present evidence of his use of Lance's credit card. The state submits that this evidence was inextricably intertwined to the charged crimes. Again, as previously mentioned, appellant began using Lance's credit card when Lance went into the hospital, used it throughout his stay and even after his death. And the credit card balance was getting close to the limit, and by paying on that credit card, the checks were written to the credit card company, it lowered the balance, and appellant was able to continue to use the credit card. So I think that explains those two checks to the credit card company, as well as gives some context, maybe to explain how this wasn't really just a benefit of taking care of a friend's bills while he's hospitalized. The use of the credit card was part of the factual settings of the crime charge. The state is entitled to present a coherent picture of the crimes charged, and evidence of appellant's use of Lance's credit card was part of that. Appellant has raised several claims of ineffective assistance of trial counsel that I believe are adequately addressed in our brief, pending any specific questions today from this court on them. Otherwise, I have reached the end of my prepared remarks. So if there are no additional questions from the court, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The case is submitted. Counsel is excused. Thank you for coming. And that concludes our afternoon session. Thank you.
Thank you.